FabLab Podcast, Episode 54, Special Edition, 4 Leadership Lessons on the 4th of July. Welcome to the FabLab Podcast, where we focus on the business side of your stone shop so you can achieve higher profits and lower frustration inside your business and more life outside of it. Welcome back to the FabLab Podcast. I'm your host, Aaron Crowley. All alone in the Fab Lab studio today without my co-host, Wes Rice. Special edition episode today, celebrating the 4th of July, taking a brief departure from the theme that we've been on, launching season 2 with the train wreck, with the turnaround. And next week, next episode, episode 55, we're going to talk about the transformation. But because it's the week of 4th of July, I wanted to do a special episode. One, to just to celebrate this great holiday that I love so much. But number two, tell a fantastic story from American history from this 4th of July era. You know, that is a part of our history that you may not know and might find really interesting, but more importantly than that, to learn some lessons from this story that apply today. So before we get to that, before we get to those four lessons of leadership on the 4th of July, I want to mention a word from our sponsor, NoLiftInstallSystem.com. You know, since we're on the subject and on the topic of freedom, liberty, independence, I want to talk about freedom, liberty, and independence from lifting 3CM countertops. You know, when you think about it, imagine a CEO of a large construction company. 30 years of experience, done everything, seen everything, massive knowledge base, massive expertise, massive intuition. Imagine that CEO out on the job site the day the project begins with a shovel in his hand, digging the foundation. Meanwhile, there's an excavator and an operator just around the corner. That CEO's experience would be completely underutilized and misaligned if he was to be doing that manual labor. And I'm not saying there's anything wrong with manual labor, but the massive potential that individual brings to that company is completely unrealized in that setting. And the same thing is true for a granite and quartz countertop installer. Massive skill, massive experience, highly paid. The impact is so huge, and yet they're out there muscling granite and quartz countertops off of carts, shuffling them in the shop, muscling them into the trailer or onto the pickup truck or into the van, lifting them again onto a rolling device that gets them into the work area, and then lifting them yet again. All of this massive manual labor, this wear and tear on their bodies, meanwhile, that is delaying and preventing them from utilizing that skill and experience that is ultimately what results and turns into a fantastic installation that the customer's going to love. And so the no-lift install system frees them from that manual labor. It's the difference between a shovel and an excavator. The cart does all the heavy lifting, rolls it into the work area up the awesome roller ramp, lifts it mechanically to cabinet countertop height, and then rotates it into the horizontal position so that those heavy and awkward counters can be easily slid into place without the wear and tear on your installer's body, those highly skilled individuals that are so difficult to replace in this labor pool that we're experiencing right now. So my recommendation to you, free your installers from the wear and tear from that manual labor so that they can be freed up to do more installations that make your company look good. So check out NoLiftSystem.com. Fantastic financing, fantastic product to boost your business. So now back to our episode today, the four leadership lessons on the 4th of July. I want to tell you a story. It's called the Battle of Dorchester Heights. It actually began before 1776 when the Declaration of Independence was actually signed and then broadcast to the world. But the war had already really started. Even before we had officially declared our independence from Britain, there was a battle. The colonies had assembled. They'd sent representatives to Philadelphia. I think it was the Continental Congress. They had voted to appoint George Washington as the general of the Continental Army, or the Rebel Army, as they were known at that point. And there were skirmishes. There were battles. There was open warfare going on in New England with Britain's army, the most powerful army on the face of the earth at the time. And so this story picks up outside of Boston, Massachusetts. General Washington, they're camped outside of Boston. The British army has basically moved in and occupied the city of Boston. They've got great accommodations, great resources, and Washington's army has the exact opposite of that. Things haven't been going very well. Congress is impatient. There have been some defeats. There are other generals criticizing Washington, and Washington is looking for a victory. He needs something to boost morale. Enlistments in the Continental Army at that time were 1 year long. Many of them were coming up, and Washington was worried that the soldiers weren't going to reenlist and he was going to lose his army before the war even really got going. And so he went to his Council of War and he proposed a plan, a direct frontal assault on downtown Boston. Let's just barrel down in there by force of will and we'll drive them out. That was his goal. That was his plan. He wanted a victory that would boost morale and get people to reenlist, get the Continental Congress off his back, and kind of solidify his position. So he brought this idea to his Council of War, and this brings us to our first point. The lesson in leadership is that we need to have an advisory group. We need to have wise counsel, or in military terms, a Council of War. The group of trusted advisors that you can bring things to for feedback and assistance. And so that's what Washington did. His Council of War was made up by some young officers, not a lot of experience, but they were highly motivated and highly trustworthy, people that General Washington literally entrusted his life to. He brought his idea of this frontal assault on Boston, and they said, no, the stakes are too high. The risk is too big. If we're defeated, we'll never recover. And this happened two or three times. Washington came back and said, no, I really think we need to do this. And they came back and said, no, we really cannot sign off on this. We can't do it. And so Washington relented somewhat begrudgingly. He wanted a victory really bad. He could taste it. And yet his Council of War would not sign off on this direct frontal assault. And so he went back to the drawing board, which really leads us to our second point. Listening to advice. If you're going to assemble great advisors, managers, a leadership team, you know, legal, financial advice outside of your company, consultants, if you're going to build a team, a council of war, you got to listen to their advice. If you reject it, oh boy, what good is that advice? And Washington was wise enough. We're going to see this later on in the story, how important taking this advice really was. But Washington took their advice, went back to the drawing board, and conceived of another brilliant plan. This one was completely unconventional and totally out of the box. And this plan was actually made possible because of another out-of-the-box plan that had just unfolded earlier that winter. He had sent Henry Knox and a group of soldiers north through New York in the dead of winter to attack Fort Ticonderoga, a British outpost, heavily guarded garrison. Totally unexpected. The British didn't think anybody in their right mind would come out there at that time of year, and yet this band of soldiers that Washington had sent up there surprised them, defeated them, and then most importantly, captured somewhere between 15 and 20 brass cannons that they then ended up using horses and sleds, and they hauled those all the way back through New York, all the way to Boston. And the British in Boston did not know that they had them. And so Washington, you know, undersupplied, understaffed, underfunded, basically lacking anything that a conventional military would want or need to fight the largest military force on the face of the earth, now had these 15 or 20 cannons. So there's a hill overlooking Boston called Dorchester Heights, and it was a commanding view. It was a very prominent place in the topography or in the geography, and Washington came up with a new plan that he proposed to his war cabinet, and they signed off on it. What this required of them was to build in advance a whole bunch of defensive works, barrels, logs, trees, brush, these pre-made defensive works that they could haul up onto that hill along with the cannons, secure the cannons, and aim them down into Boston, and hopefully scare the British out of Boston, but if not, basically destroy the city to drive them away. And so they began working on this plan in the dead of night. Complete total secrecy was absolutely necessary. The element of surprise had to be complete. If the British caught wind of this and saw them preparing, all those ships in the harbor could have come up into this bay and basically blasted them before they had a chance to actually put their plan into work. And so this massive plan was undertaken, total secrecy, massive work was being done, nobody was the wiser. There was a ravine between where General Washington's army was camped and the top of Dorchester Heights that actually was visible from downtown Boston where the British were, you know, had lookouts. So they very slowly, as this plan was unfolding, they slowly added and incrementally increased a straw bale wall across that ravine. And they did it so slowly that the British never caught wind to it. But what it did is become a barrier, became a break, if you will, that would allow the Continental Army the ability to move all of those cannons and move all of that defensive work down that ravine and up onto the hill without being seen by the British. So after weeks and weeks and weeks of planning and weeks and weeks and weeks of unbelievable effort, time came to actually pull the trigger on this plan, and divine intervention occurred. A major fog bank rolled in to obscure the view from the harbor from downtown Boston. And exactly as planned, the Continental Army moved all of those defensive works and all of those cannons not only up onto this hill, but actually into place before daylight occurred. And when daylight occurred, the British were in for the shock of their lives. General Howe was a renowned and famous and highly decorated British general that had been sent by the King of England to basically suppress the American uprising, this rebellion, this revolution. And let me read you a quote from him the morning after Washington's plan unfolded. "My God, these fellows have done more work in one night than I could make my army do in 3 months." So the surprise was absolute. It was complete. It was total. And the consequences, in a nutshell, were this. All of those brass cannons aiming down into the harbor, aiming down on Boston, basically left the British defenseless. I mean, they could have tried to sail their ships up into that harbor, but they would have been blasted by the cannons. And so, to make a long story short, they ultimately decided to retreat. There was a little bit of conversation, basically, we'll leave Boston if you'll leave us alone. And Washington agreed, and the British fled, for all intents and purposes. Now, in the aftermath of that, we see something very, very important, this critical component, this critical lesson of listening to wise counsel, having advisors and taking their advice to heart and implementing it. You see, after the British fled downtown Boston in their ships, they sailed to New York. The Continental Army, of course, understandably, rushed down into downtown Boston to basically take possession of the city. And here's what they found. They found that city about 100 times more fortified and better defended than their intelligence had suggested. Historians believe now, after assessing the full scope of this story, that had Washington defied the advice of his generals, of his officers, and attacked downtown Boston in a frontal assault, they would have been absolutely wiped out. And here's the shocking thing about that. If General Washington's army had been defeated like that at that point, 9 months before the Declaration of Independence was actually signed, there would have never been a Declaration of Independence. There would have never been a Revolutionary War. There would have never been a Constitution, and there never would have been a United States of America. Wow. This lesson is so profound for us to listen to our advice. And so we see these two other, lessons play out here. The innovation, Washington didn't just stop and go back and sulk in his tent. He went back to the drawing board and he thought outside of the box. The fourth principle was that he was willing to take risks. You know, it's one thing to plan a very daring assault. It's another thing to actually give the order to carry it out. And Washington was there the entire time. The entire time, Washington was right there in the middle of it. And so those are the four lessons that we can learn from this story of American history, the battle for Dorchester Heights, this huge victory. It really transformed the mood, the national response to that was just overwhelming. Morale was boosted. Reenlistments were boosted. Congress was elated. General Washington's position as the leader of the Continental Army was secured as a result of these four lessons. Number one, he had a council of war that he brought decisions to. Number two, he listened to their advice and he took it to heart. He didn't defy his advisors out of, arrogance or pride or just thinking so much of himself. And number three, Washington, man, he was unconventional. The British did not know what to do with these American generals that really had no playbook. I mean, we really didn't have a standing army. There was no West Point to tell everybody how to, run an army and how to devise strategy. They were thinking out of the box. They were creative. And the same thing is necessary right now for us in a maturing industry as it evolves. As this product of this granite and quartz countertop product becomes more and more of a commodity, man, if you're not innovating, you are stuck competing on price. So we got to think outside the box. We got to be unconventional in the value that we bring to our customers. And number four, we got to be willing to take risks. Like I said, it's one thing to think up a plan. It's one thing to develop a strategy. It's another thing to actually pull the trigger and set it into motion when there's consequences, true risks, have consequences attached to them if they don't work out. And so, fellow fabricator, fellow Stone Shop owner, ladies and gentlemen, audience of the Fab Lab podcast, I am so glad that you tuned in for this episode on this 4th of July. Happy 4th of July. We have so much to be thankful for. And so I just hope over the next few days, you take this to heart. You think about how these lessons might apply in your own business, in your own leadership of your stone shop. And if you think that these lessons and this information might help somebody else running their stone shop, would you consider sharing the Fab Lab podcast with them? Boy, it'd be a really big help to me if you would go to Google Play or to iTunes and write a review or just review the podcast based on the number of stars, depending on how valuable you think it is. And also, if you got any questions, if you got any comments, make sure you visit us on Instagram at Fabricators Friends Instagram page and Fabricators Friends Facebook page. So, ladies and gentlemen, as always, it's such an honor and such a pleasure to be with you. Happy 4th of July. Make sure you check back in next week for episode 55, where we talk about the transformation. Until then, happy fabricating.